reasons. They're burning all the witches, even if you aren't one. So light me up, light me up, light me up. Go ahead and light me up.
Celebrate a birthday, anniversary, or maybe an engagement soon? At Brentwood Golf Club, our fully licensed function room is perfect for your special occasion. With reasonable room hire, a fully stocked bar, and access to decorate your theme from 10 a.m, contact Stacey or Chanel in our functions team on 01277 375 101 to find out more. Brentwood Golf Club Function Room. Making your celebration that bit more special.
Is your child struggling to achieve their best in English or maths? At Guided Learning, we want to support your child to be more confident in their learning. If their school says that they're below expectations or not being challenged enough, then face-to-face sessions with our fully qualified teachers can help. Google us at Guided Learning Brentwood to see how we can help your child achieve their best.
Do you or someone you know have a drug problem?
Talk to someone that has been there.
Narcotics Anonymous is a group of recovering addicts that has found a new way to live without the use of drugs.
For a confidential chat or to find your local meeting, call 0300 999 1212 or visit our website ukna.org.
Take the first step to recovery.
The all-new Players Lounge has got everything you need for the perfect night out. With two bars, a restaurant and the best sound and lighting system in Essex. With regular special events and guest DJs, you're always guaranteed a brilliant night at Players. Book now at players-lounge.co.uk.
And that was Fallout Boy Mortals. And for that, we had I Did Something Bad. Taylor Swift, not me. So we have been talking about villains all through the show today, and we just did some local events as well. So here's time for some national news before we get back to our villainous countdown. Well, it's not good news for the creative courses in the education sector. At least 14 universities are implementing redundancy programs which are all affecting arts degrees, or they're closing creative courses. It's emerged in the last week because there's some data that's been compiled by Queen Mary University of London's branch of the University and College Union, which shows 8 universities have imposed direct cuts on creative degrees, and a further 6 have implemented university-wide redundancies that impact arts faculties over the last year. The majority of these universities say their schemes are down to drops in student numbers and also public funding. Some are threatening compulsory redundancies if voluntary schemes do not fulfil planned quotas. Earlier this month, the union called on university vice chancellors to oppose government plans to cut funding for performing and creative arts courses. And the call followed guidance issued by Education Secretary Gillian Keegan, which I think we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, which stated grants intended to meet the extra costs of offering music, drama, fashion and other arts courses for undergraduates should be frozen. The move was the latest in a string of government decisions deemed to negatively impact arts degrees. Last year, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak announced that from the academic year 24-25, limits would be imposed on courses that do not have a high proportion of graduates getting, in quote, professional jobs, pursuing further studies or starting businesses, because obviously nobody in the creative industries has ever started a business. The cap aimed at what that was sarcasm. The cap aimed at what would have been billed as low value degrees is largely expected to impact creative degrees, as graduates are less likely to follow traditional employment routes, but so many of them become entrepreneurs. Never mind. If you are funded by Arts Council England, then you might be in for a bit of an easier ride in terms of reporting on the impact of your funding. The Chief Executive of Arts Council England has said that while data collection from funded organisations is still a necessity, he's listening to the sector's concerns and he wants to act. They are working on ways to streamline how their regularly funded, which are called national portfolio organisations, are required to provide data in time for its next funding round beginning April 2027. And finally, on Arts Council England, Shadow Culture Secretary has said that Arts Council England would be central to a decade of national renewal under a Labour government. Speaking at the Stage's Future of Theatre conference last month, Debonair said that if her party wins the next general elections, one of the first things that she would do as Culture Secretary would be a review of the Arts Council, if necessary. And we've previously talked about this on our show, that there is an existing review of Arts Council England initiated earlier on last month, being conducted by Dame Mary Archer, with Culture Secretary Lucy Fraser saying the exercise will help ensure Arts Council England is driving creative excellence in the arts by funding ambitious projects of the highest quality. Debonair also used her speech, this is the Shadow Culture Secretary, to set out her 5 priorities for the arts under a Labour government. These involve getting more funding into the sector, finding the right balance for the use of artificial intelligence, improving creative education, boosting prospects for freelancers, and improving diversity and equality. So there you go. We'll take a little break between the next piece of national news. But all the good girls go to hell, apparently.
My Lucifer is lonely, standing there, killing time. Can't commit to anything but a crime. Leaders on vacation, an open invitation. Animals, evidence. Pearly gates look more like a picket fence. Once you get inside them, got friends but can't invite them. Hills burn in California. My turn to ignore ya. Don't say I didn't warn ya. The good girls go to hell, 'cause even God herself has enemies. And once the water starts to rise, some greenery. Walking wearing feathers, Peter should know better. Your cover up is caving in. Man is such a fool, why are we saving him? Poisoning themselves now, begging for our help. Wow, who's burned in California? My turn to ignore ya. Don't say I didn't warn ya. All the good girls go to hell, cause even God herself has enemies. And once the water starts to rise and heaven's out of sight, she'll want the devil on her team. My love so far is lonely.
I cannot do this, snowflake.
And that was Billie Eilish with All the Good Girls Go to Hell. Continuing our villainous music theme. So we are talking about national news, and I thought I'd do some nice national news. Here's some more exciting national news compared to what I've just been sharing with you. A watch belonging to Titanic's richest passenger has sold for a record-breaking £1.75 million. It was a gold pocket watch which had reached slightly uncomfortable way of recovered from the body of John Jacob Astor, the richest man on the Titanic, has sold at auction, and it's apparently the highest amount ever paid for Titanic memorabilia. The watch was sold by Henry Aldridge and Son in Devizes in England to a private collector in the United States. Astor was a renowned businessman and made his fortune in the fur trade. He was 47 years old when the Titanic sank in 1912, and according to accounts from survivors, Astor didn't believe the ship was in any kind of immediate danger. In fact, after he'd helped his new wife Madeline aboard a lifeboat, Astor was seen smoking a cigarette and talking with another passenger. His body was recovered from the Atlantic Ocean 7 days later, and his 14 carat gold Waltham pocket watch engraved with his initials came with him. His wife survived, and at the time Astor was not only the richest passenger on the Titanic, but he was also one of the richest people in the world, with a net worth of approximately 87 million or several billion dollars today. So whoever's got that, lucky them. A new podcast has been launched by Julie's Bicycle, an arts organisation leading on climate justice, which asks, what do arts and culture bring to climate leadership? Called the Creative Climate Leadership Podcast, it features remarkable stories of individuals leading radical and transformational projects in music, film, galleries, academia, activism, tech, design and performing arts across the world. Over 6 episodes, you're going to hear stories, insights and solutions from the creative community, with a host, award-winning multidisciplinary arts producer Emanuela Morski. Alumni from across the network discuss topical themes ranging from climate justice to effective communication, emerging tech in the creative space, policy and artistic practice. Guests include all sorts of incredible people, from academics, activists, documentarians, campaigners, all sorts of amazing people. So if you're interested in, you're in the art sector, or you're just interested in the art sector being having a role in climate justice, then listen to the Creative Climate Leadership Podcast. I'm going to take another song now, which is, you know, villainous people. Are they pure evil?
think that I'm evil, like I am the living devil himself. All these folk, they think that I'm evil, like I am the living devil himself. All these folk, they think that I'm evil, like I am the living devil himself. All these folk, they think that I'm evil, like I am the living devil.
Thank you, Nadine Shah, for that. That was evil. Finishing off the news then for the national news. Take That. Have you heard all the furore about Take That? Have announced that they will not be performing at the new Co-op Live Arena due to ongoing technical issues. Oh, I do feel for the Co-op Live Arena people. It's the boy band had been due to perform from Tuesday, but have switched their shows to the rival AO Arena. The Co-op Live Arena is the UK's biggest indoor arena, and it cost £365 million, and unfortunately it's had to postpone its opening numerous times, and it's now taking a short pause before welcoming members of the public from the 14th of May. And I did see some other reports about the staff in the arena who were, you know, really, really like in tears, really upset that these things had happened and these delays had happened. But I'm sure that they will make it right, and then we will forget about this in a few months' time. Brilliant news, though. Oh, my goodness. Have you seen this exploding all over the interwebby, sphere-y, social media-y? Smithy and Nessa are back this Christmas. I can't wait. I was really not sure whether they were going to do this, but they are. Fans of Gavin and Stacey are rejoicing after this week when co-writers James Corden and Ruth Jones announced that the show would be returning for one final time. Oh my goodness. With the show's imminent return, many are speculating about the cliffhanger at the end of 2019's festive special, which we now all have to go and watch again. Whether or not Smithy accepts Nessa's shock proposal. I loves you, Smithy, I does. That was terrible, but oh, I've watched it so many times. Fans needn't wait, though, because the bookies are on top of it already. So they are saying that the character are currently odds on, the characters are odds on to get married, 8 to 11, giving viewers dream reunion a 56% chance of happening. So fingers crossed. And finally, this week, it is the nominations for the 77th Tony Awards, which is the awards for Broadway shows in New York. Some of the shows that made the list are hopefully some of these will come across to the West End. So in Best New Musical is Hell's Kitchen, The Outsiders, Illinois and Suffs, and Water for Elephants. And in Best New Play, Jar Jar's American Hair Braiding, Mary Jane, Mother Play, Prayer for the French Republic, and Stereophonic. So we shall keep an eye out to see which winners come out of the Tonys and then probably head their way over to the West End at some point. Right, so let's get back to some music and let's kill tonight. And that's ELO with Evil Woman. Before that, we had Let's Kill Tonight, Panic at the Disco. So just to be clear, that wasn't an instruction. Let's get back to our villains theme then. And so here are 20 villains of films that I have collated together from a variety of sources. I don't think I've put them in any particular order of which is more villainous than others, but maybe you can decide for yourself. So starting off, I mean, obviously there's loads of horror films, aren't there, out there to think about villains, but you can't really think about villains and horror films without putting Michael Myers in there. The Halloween series from 1978 to 2018, it's everything, isn't it, about the shape, the silent killer, the psychopath with some serious family issues. It's co-writer director John Carpenter's credit that he turned an old William Shatner mask and some decidedly non-threatening attire into one of the most iconic killers in cinema history for the original Halloween. Michael is one of those who doesn't need much in a way of a personality or a backstory, and he's just a massive threat. He's a massive villain. His impact has been diluted throughout the years a little bit, but if you go back to the original films back in 1978, goodness gracious me, he is a villain that can strike terror into anybody. The next one on my list is Terminator 2, so the T-1000, more so than Terminator 1, I think, for me. You've got the hulking cyborg of Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was the kind of villain in the first one, and then you've got a new one, the T-1000, in Terminator 2, which Robert Patrick was the man chosen to play that awful, scary metal killer. Do you remember where he would like melt and then put himself back together again, and the kind of look down the camera when he was running and all that kind of stuff? He's definitely Schwarzenegger's version, maybe not quite as villainous as Robert Patrick's version, and you never saw him coming until it was too late, that T-1000. Anyway, that's number 19. Number 18, Freddy Krueger, another one, you know. You can't think about horror films without thinking about Nightmare on Elm Street, and that ran from 1984 to 2010. And I can't even say, I can't even say the line because it's too scary. The Freddy's coming for you line. I refuse to say it out loud. It's a bit like Beetlejuice. I've said that once. So Nightmare on Elm Street's Freddy Krueger was that kind of chillingly effective bogeyman that gave everybody sleepless nights in the 1980s. So he's on the list. Another one, so the Matrix trilogy. So I went and watched these recently because I wanted to understand, because there's a new one, and I wanted to just kind of remind myself of the Matrix trilogy. And Hugo Weaving's Agent Smith is really remorseless as an agent in his, and his, I mean, his remit is just, you know, just to get rid and maintain cold, hard order at any point. And of course, he's just an AI program in a virtual reality designed to keep humanity in this comatose state. But his files are clearly corrupted, as the kind of wonderful "I hate this speech" to Morpheus, Lawrence Fishburne, reveals. And that's the key to Smith's effectiveness as a baddie. He's not just the epitome of an oppressed regime stooge, but he's one who hates his job as well. There you go. You have a look at the Matrix trilogy, remind yourself about Agent Smith. An oldie but a goodie, Norman Bates. I mean, you couldn't, like, oh wow, what a villain. I remember watching that in the 80s, the first time I watched Psycho. I was absolutely terrified for months. The man behind the woman behind the knife in cinema's greatest shower scene to date. I don't think there has been another one since then. It was the first of its kind, Psycho, that kind of cinematic kind, the kind of movie monster who is 100% human rather than kind of playing some kind of animalistic monster. But kind of this, it really introduced this kind of, you know, this mixed side of him being him one minute, Norman Bates, and then the other minute kind of, you know, turning into his terrifying kind of mother possessed version of himself. But yeah, that was, I mean, gosh, how audiences in the 1960s took to that, but I know how they did in the 1980s, and it was very, very scary. And number 15 on my list is Star Wars. So there are a number of baddies. There's a number of villains in Star Wars. This one is Palpatine. I mean, he just looks he looks really old and frail, but he also looks really scary. When we encountered him first in the flesh, we knew him as the Emperor in Return of the Jedi's kind of slightly porridge-faced, creaky-voiced overlord. And he always arrived in this kind of heavy robe, which was, you know, draping him. But yeah, he's sort of Darth Vader's boss, really, isn't he? But with the prequel trilogy, we also got to know him, Palpatine, the man behind the Sith Lord, and really appreciate what a slick and sleeky political manipulator he was. So Palpatine is up there as a kind of, you know, compelling and disturbingly realistic creation. So there are two villains on this list, and there's who've been played by the same person, and it's Alan Rickman. I mean, just amazing anyway. But Alan Rickman is on this list twice, once for Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, because of course he was the Sheriff of Nottingham, one of the greatest villains of all time, because he does things horribly so well, you know, with such gusto. And legend has it that he kept refusing the role of the Sheriff of Nottingham until it was agreed he could do whatever he liked with it, which sounds like fun times. And you can then went on to steal the whole show, really, didn't he? I mean, he really was, never mind Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, it was the Sheriff of Nottingham. So he's definitely on our list. And then the other one on our list, I'll come back to the other Alan Rickman later. But so slightly different to what you might expect that I'd pick out from this, all these different things that I was looking at. But Nurse Ratched from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest back in 1975. I mean, she was so cold, wasn't she? She was more than just kind of the head of the psychiatric hospital. She was just terrifyingly cold, really, like no emotion, really horrible, horrible person. So she was quite chilling as a villain in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And, you know, possibly, you know, maybe you were thinking maybe Jack Nicholson. He's not really the villain of the piece, is it? But she really is. And then you've got some kind of characters that are kind of, you know, from literary that move into film. Two from the same. So Sauron, I think, villain or just... like, yeah, I mean, Sauron's a weird one because he's just an eye. So from the Lord of the Rings trilogy and the Hobbit trilogy, this kind of great eye, this lidless eye wreathed in flame, which is the description of the Dark Lord of Mordor. How you kind of put across that massive fiery eye? But, you know, Peter Jackson really did in the Lord of the Rings, and it did help us beforehand that we saw that kind of prologue, which was Sauron as this sort of huge mace welding fighter capable of fighting entire battalions with one single blow. But yes, but then when he's reduced to that eye, that kind of horrible staring eye, he's the stuff of nightmares flashing through Frodo's mind whenever he touches the ring. And yeah, so he's on our list of villains. But also on this list, I saw people were putting Gollum on this list, and I think I disagree with this. I don't think Gollum is a villain. I think Gollum is much misunderstood. He's quite, you know, he was a human. He was a man at the beginning until he came into touch with the ring. And I just think he kind of went mad because of his relationship with the ring. That was the ring that drove him to become Gollum, wasn't it? Because he was Sméagol originally. I had a cat called Sméagol. But I wouldn't trust him as far as I could throw him. But I don't think he classifies as a villain for me. So I'm going to leave him out of that list and say he's kind of misunderstood. But anyway, let's get back to... two more tracks called Evil. This one is firstly James Vincent McMorrow. Let's hear his version of Evil.
Oh, no. habit. Will we ever reach the point where this fits me like a man? And I think if I'm
Charging Systems, your local, independent and experienced specialist home and workplace charge point suppliers and installers. With over 1,000 installations throughout Essex and East London and a 5-star excellent Trustpilot rating, we provide great personal service and are committed to help Essex drivers go green. Visit www.evchargingsystems.co.uk or call us on 01268 710 459. Install, charge and go with EV Charging Systems.
The elements influence us each year, whether it's heat in summer or cold in winter. At JWD, we can take care of all your heating and air conditioning needs at a reasonable price, with finance available through our partners Can-Do, if required. Our engineers give their promise to be clean and tidy, whilst carrying out works to the highest standard. Give us a call on 0776 009 239 or visit our social media pages at JWD Heating.
Immerse yourself in the true Mediterranean essence at Leilina Modern Lebanese, nestled on Billericay's vibrant high street. Uncover the magic of our hidden garden. Sip on exceptional cocktails, savour unforgettable cuisine, and create cherished memories that linger long after you leave. Enjoy a complimentary glass of house wine when you mention Phoenix FM upon booking. Available Sunday to Thursday. Terms and conditions apply.
Be part of Havering's biggest coffee morning by hosting your own work or personal tea party or coffee morning for St. Francis Hospice on any day in May. Support your local charity in their 40th birthday year and help raise vital funds for local people in need. For more information, visit the St. Francis Hospice Facebook page or the St. Francis Hospice website, sfh.org.uk.
Oh, I can't believe where the time has gone today. I've been stuck in all sorts of interesting villain conversations and I haven't got long and I've got to finish my list. So we are at number 10 and this is the alien. Of course, you can't, I mean, it's a creature, but it's a villain from the Alien series from 1979 to 2017. The perfect organism, its structural perfection is matched only by its hostility. That's effectively summed up by Ian Holmes Ash, a survivor unclouded by conscience, remorse, or delusions of morality. Yep, that is the alien. In at number 9 is in the Harry Potter series, Voldemort, a villain, obviously, inspired by the name of a decaying Edgar Allan Poe character, M. Valdemar. It was also J.K. Rowling's love of French that resulted in the moniker meaning the light of death, the flight of death. So yeah, Voldemort's definitely in there for one of the villains. No Country for Old Men, Anton Chigurh. I mean, when I first watched No Country for Old Men, I thought it was going to be a cowboy film. Clearly not. Javier Bardem accepted his Oscar for Best Supporting Actor in 2018. He thanked the Coen brothers specifically for putting one of the most horrible haircuts in history on his head, apparently. But yeah, he was the malevolent spirit of Anton Chigurh, the cartel hitman. I mean, he just was quite frightening as a villain. Over in Star Wars again, we have to have Kylo Ren. He's at number 7. He appeared in a film series that also obviously had Palpatine and Darth Vader as well. And then we've already mentioned Palpatine. Darth Vader's probably going to be in this list somewhere nearer the top. But Kylo Ren was played by Adam Driver, and he's become so much more complicated than his initials. And he's definitely, yes, you know, others did some horrible things, but Kylo Ren murdered his own dad in cold blood. There you go. There's a film called Inglorious Bastards. Apologies. There's a guy, a character in there called Hans Lander. He's a Nazi who was this kind of really disarmingly charming character, but it kind of made him all the more disturbing, psychopathic. But yeah, so he finds the ideal vessel in Christopher Waltz, who's kind of, their connection in that film is quite something. So have a look at that one. Hannibal Lecter, I was thinking of The Silence of the Lambs not so long ago, and I thought, I really must watch that again. It's a long time since I've watched it. But yeah, Hannibal Lecter, really, Silence of the Lambs, Hannibal and Red Dragon. I mean, you can just see Anthony Hopkins, who has made that kind of legend of our screens. A lot of the villains that we've looked at are about kind of, you know, they've been defined by what they did. And actually, a lot of what Anthony Hopkins did was nothing. It was just his stillness was the kind of the terrifying thing that he did. Here's the second nomination for Alan Rickman, Hans Gruber. You've got to put Hans Gruber in this list from Die Hard 1988. I mean, it's just an incredible, incredible performance and, you know, one of our favourite films on the show. Number 3, we're going to put Loki in there because we haven't had anyone from the Thor films. So, you know, there's Tom Hiddleston's bitter, scheming, adopted child of Asgard. He's very much that kind of, hey, you wouldn't trust Loki, would you? Absolutely not. In at number 2 is the Joker because, again, the Batman, I've talked a lot about Batman today, but all of the Batman villains, if there's one that really requires to be, you know, on this list, it's the Joker. I mean, he's been played by so many different people, but, you know, there's all sorts of different relationships with the Joker. But I think, you know, he's just this really demonic person, this demonic thing, isn't he, in Batman? But on my list of compiled lists of all sorts of different people's views, number 1 is Darth Vader because he's the ultimate baddie, isn't he? And he wears a cape. So, you know, he's the ultimate baddie and he can pull off a cape. What more can you want? That is all that we've got time for this week. I can't believe that's gone so quickly. Natalie will be back next week telling us, we'll have a future programme all about her trip to the Venice Biennale. But we are going to welcome, as usual, after us, we're going to hand over to Nigel for the best soul funk, and he's got some guests coming in the studio as well. So I hope you've enjoyed your villains and superheroes fortnight. I've been Claire, and this has been the Arts Council. This has not been the Arts Council. This has been the Arts Programme on Phoenix FM. Have a good Sunday, everyone.
Sing muse of the warning by the whistle. A night so dark in the waning. A dawn obscured by a slate sky raining. Rain.
it's a perfect, perfect crime. It was a perfect, 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 the perfect crime. It was a perfect crime.
The perfect, the perfect, the perfect, the perfect, the perfect. and the maximum security, even after plastic surgery. So go on and squeal at the FBI. We can make a deal, make it worth your while.
There's a gentleman that's going round, turning the joint upside down. With his crooked friends, and they joked about the good old days, and he recorded it on a reel of tape. He caught the mug who did the forgery and the babe in charge of larceny. So the FBI, they rewarded him because they like a guy who will stab a friend.
Across Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM News.